Welcome to the Beyond the Test podcast, where we connect you with professionals who are innovating their industry and share their stories of passion, self-awareness, and pursuing their dreams to learn what it takes to succeed in work and life beyond the test.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Beyond the Test podcast. If you're new to the show, we're your hosts, Michael Cohen, the Tech Rabbi,
and Ara Manzano, 11th grade student at Eula Boys High School.
As Director of Innovation at Eula Boys High School, this podcast was created as a response to a void that Ariel noticed.
I noticed that you can find podcasts if you work in industries like marketing, real estate, or finance. But what about if you don't know what you want to do? This is the podcast for you.
Whether you're a high school student or someone still searching for that dream profession, we hope the conversations here with our amazing guests will inspire you to think beyond the test.
Our guest today built a career as a software engineer until the success of his first published novel, The Martian, allowed him to live out his dream of writing full time. He's a lifelong space nerd and a devoted hobbyist of subjects such as relativistic physics, orbital mechanics, and the history of manned spaceflight. Our guest today is Andy Weir. Andy, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so let's dig into the first question. It's pretty simple, straightforward. Tell us a little bit about your professional journey. Lots of teenagers think you need to go to college to get one job, and that is what you are going to do for the rest of your life.
Well, that's certainly not the case for me. Back when I was a teenager, I knew I wanted to be a writer, but I also really like having regular meals. So when the time came, when I went to college and the time came for me to choose a career and a major, I went with computer science since it seemed a lot safer to me. I'm not a big risk taker, and I don't like, I didn't want to go into a career that was as risky as being an author. So, and I love programming computers. I loved it even then. And so anyway, I went to college. I did that. I was a software engineer for many years, a total of 25 years, actually. But I always wrote on the side. And then I wrote, I even took 3 years off from working as an engineer because I came into some money and to try to break into writing full time. And I failed. I didn't make it in. The book I wrote, it wasn't The Martian and it wasn't that good. And I, after 3 years, I said like, well, okay, that was fun. I don't need to wonder what might've been. So now I can kind of get back to work as a software engineer. And that was not a sad moment for me. I really do like programming computers. And so it's just like, okay, I took a shot at my dream and now I'm going back to a career that I enjoy. Then over time, I was writing more and more as a hobby for fun. And so posting it to my website, and I wrote some serials. One of them, and one of the serial fiction things I was releasing a chapter at a time was The Martian. And that took off and got really popular. And that's how I ended up breaking into writing. So as you say, like, definitely, I did not have a single career. I had software engineering. And then once The Martian got popular and I realized that could be my, you know, livelihood, I pivoted over to being a writer, which was always my top number one dream. And also in the middle there, now all that stuff I just told you, people see that, hear about that all the time in interviews. But here's something exclusive to the Tech Rabbi. Since you're talking about no such thing as one single career, around 2000, the tech bubble popped, the year 2000, and it became very, very difficult for software engineers to find a job. It lasted a few years. At the time, it seemed like it was just the end of that profession, or at least it was so impacted that I went like a solid year looking for a job between jobs. I'd been laid off. And anyway, so I thought, well, maybe this career doesn't work. And so I said, well, what other career can I do to pay the bills? And I decided I wanted to try out being a locksmith. I'd always been fascinated by locks and small mechanical workings. And so I was actively job hunting for a software job. But since I was going, since that was dragging out longer and longer, I said, like, okay, I'm going to start making a backup career. And I looked into trade schools for being taught locksmithing and how to get, you know, my credentials and accredited and stuff like that, and how the process works for being a, you know, being a novice and, you know, working in a locksmith shop and kind of like learning on the job as well. But while I was going through that process, I did end up landing a software job. So I stayed with engineering, but I was ready to change over.
It's really interesting how all of those professions that you looked at, it was really following your interests. It wasn't just doing a basic job that everybody else in the world wanted to do. It was really what you wanted to do. And that's very interesting. And it really brings the question, how in those fields of how did you use creative thinking, and how do you still use creative thinking?
Well, of course, writing is all about creative thinking, so that's pretty self-explanatory. Software engineering is really all about problem solving. So you have to be, you have to really try to, you know, think outside the box, to use an overused expression. And so with software engineering, it's a very cut and dried profession in terms of goals and objectives. It's like, look, here, this is the thing we want. You have to make a program that does this. This is an exact list of features, and they all have to work correctly. And so that's really nice, because when you're writing, you don't have clear objectives. You're just like, hey, make a book that people like, and you don't know exactly how to do that. When you're making software, other people in the company design it. Your job is just to implement it, and it's really comforting not to have to do that creative side of it. And it's kind of a part of being a software engineer that I miss, just having clear, extremely well-defined goals. But the way that you solve those problems is where the fun stuff is. It's where the creative thinking comes in. So yeah, hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, I think it does. I think that a lot of the times there's this just major focus on life as a linear experience. And, you know, you do these, you know, these steps that have been sort of laid out for you. You're told this is kind of the recipe for success, and things are changing the way that, you know, the internet and technology are kind of just, I think, disrupting the way in which traditionally success was found. And I'm curious if you can sort of find that line between your profession, the work that you do, other professions. Like, what is it that you sort of see that's allowed for success to happen no matter what field of work you're in?
Interesting question. Well, of course, the internet is what caused me to be able to break into my new profession here. If it weren't for the internet, I probably never would have bothered to write The Martian at all. The reason I was writing it is because I had a fan base of a few thousand people that I'd accumulated over the last 10 years of, you know, posting stuff to my website. And every time I posted a chapter, I got a lot of feedback, and it felt good. I really, you know, it's like it was nice to have that external validation, and that's what drove me to keep working on it. If I'd been more in a traditional, you know, if I'd been born a few generations ago when I was writing science fiction back in the 50s or something like that, I would have either had to dedicate myself entirely to the profession of being an author or not. And I mean, I could certainly, you know, whip out the typewriter in the evenings and work on a novel, but I would be getting no feedback from anybody. I wouldn't have been getting that, kind of fan response and feedback that helped propel me and keep me motivated. And so, yeah, if you go back in time to like the 1950s or something, I would have almost certainly become an engineer of some kind. You know, I would probably be I'd probably be a guy with a, you know, a white button down shirt, short sleeves, and a drafting table. Hey, but maybe I would have ended up working for NASA or something. That would have been cool. But so things that enable that in the modern world, the internet, just the ability to communicate with so many people so quickly, really enabled me to become an author. And also, that's not limited. I mean, an author, there's a series or a category of professions that require an audience. So of course, the internet helps that. But even more interesting is with such easy access to information, you can get a broader feel for professions you might be interested in. I spent a lot of time just dorking around on YouTube and just watching videos. And I started watching more and more videos about people doing woodworking. And I was just like, oh, that's neat. Oh, okay. So this is how that guy does, you know, dovetail joints or whatever. And it started making me want to do it. And that was years ago. And now I'm really into woodworking. I've got a whole woodworking shop. My garage has been, I've completely taken over the garage. My wife has given up the notion of ever parking in the garage again. And it's awesome. And it's a really fun and enjoyable hobby for me. And that would be something that I wouldn't mind doing, you know, for a living. But obviously I'm a writer and I make a bunch of money off of that. So I'm going to keep doing that. But I really do enjoy the woodworking as well. And I never would have found out even that that's something I enjoy if it weren't for the fact that I was just watching YouTube videos of lots of different people doing lots of different things and showing off their skills at it. So just the amount of information you have access to just is good on both ends of the scale. First, it's good on the side where you're deciding what you want to do, and it's good on the side of helping you get to where you want to be.
Yeah, I think you nailed that question right on the head. As a writer, communication skills, especially written, are key. But with the internet today, verbal and visual skills are undervalued in school. Can you weigh in on why these skills are more important than ever?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first off, the internet, bear in mind, we're at the very infancy of the internet. Like 1,000 years from now, there's still going to be an internet. So we're just seeing the very, very beginning of it. Most of us, well, me and Michael, those of us who kind of grew up in the early days without it and then watched it grow, it was text-based. The internet was, and people still think along those lines. People still mostly communicate via text. There's, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Well, Instagram's photos, but still, it's a lot about written words on a page. But more and more, that's changing. Now people post videos a lot more often, and it's becoming so much easier to make a video of yourself saying something or doing something or whatever. So those interpersonal skills, the ability to convey ideas with speech and physical motion, is going to become more and more a part of just daily internet use. And that will in turn, I think, I'm a bit of a Pollyanna. I'm an optimist. I generally think the future is looking pretty good. And the fact that more and more people are going to be using video and audio to kind of like talk about what they're interested in online means that people growing up, teenagers or preteens or even little kids will start from an early age learning how to do those skills. They'll start out at age, 10, figuring out, they will learn how to communicate via YouTube videos. I mean, you can see it now with streaming gamers. I'm sorry, I'm an old fuddy-duddy. I may have the term wrong, but people who stream themselves playing games, and they'll talk and they'll communicate and they'll talk while they're playing and they'll explain what's going on and they'll say like, oh, I'm doing this because I'm optimizing for speed on this and stuff like that. And even little kids do that. Like preteens and stuff like that are doing that, and they're learning these communication skills that are just really key. And so, yeah, I think it's good. And I think it'll propel itself just by people want to do it.
Yeah, I think that, the evolution of the internet right now, it's something that we might take for granted. And I think that the generation right now that's in high school, they look at the internet as very visual and video as being a prime method of communication, whether it's Snapchat, Instagram, for game streaming, it's Twitch, it's YouTube. And technology is just going to keep advancing, and it's going to keep pushing itself to just incredible limits that we can try to imagine, and we might be right. I think that right now, the question that sort of comes to mind for me is, you are a successful writer. I personally, I have a book coming out in December, so I'm at the infancy stage of this journey as a writer.
Hey, good luck.
Thank you. Right. So how do you see the evolution of technology, let's say in the next 3 to 5 years, kind of changing maybe the way that we consume, you know, the type of content that's, you know, traditionally been written? And it's been, you know, either engaging, you know, in a medium that actually allows for your imagination to take, you know, take the steering wheel and not being, you know, dictated and guided by a visual. So I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on, you know, technology evolving the writing process, or maybe also why students should still consider writing as such an important medium of communication?
Well, in the next 3 to 5 years, I don't see any huge changes, but over the next 10 or 20, I think we are slowly moving further and further away from just pure written word. And I think from a, you know, consumer standpoint, from, you know, what people want to buy, they're liking other forms of information over just text. Looking at it, text reading consumes a lot of your concentration. And nowadays, maybe partially because of the internet or maybe not, I don't know. But nowadays, people are generally doing multiple things at once. It's rare for somebody, people nowadays, they don't generally do just one thing at a time. Like they'll have kind of multiple tabs open in their browser. They'll be, you know, jogging while they listen to music. There's that sort of thing. And so reading occupies, you can't do anything else while you're reading, except maybe listen to some instrumental music in the background. But you can't cook while you're reading. You can't exercise while you're reading. You can, I guess, if you're on a treadmill, but not really. And you can't read while you are driving to work. But getting audiobooks now are becoming a really, really popular. And, you know, I'm in the business of writing books, so I see, you know, what the sales curves look like and stuff. And audiobooks are just getting more and more and more popular. And that makes sense because people still want, you know, these cool, detailed, complicated stories, but they want that information delivered into their brain in a way that enables them to do other things at the same time. And audiobooks are the perfect way to do that. So another piece of technology that can't be overstated when it comes to information getting into your brain is your mobile device. Because it used to be, you know, okay, if you want information, well, there it is. It's in a book. Open the book, read it. But now you can have like audiobooks. You can have an infinite library of books just in your pocket. And yes, you could read them on your Kindle or on a Kindle app, but also you can listen to them while you're commuting to work or while you're exercising or while you're cooking or while you're gardening or while you're whatever. Anywhere you can listen to music, you can now read a book, quote unquote, read. And also as a result, companies are putting more effort into production quality of audiobooks. It used to be, find a guy with a decent voice and read it. Nowadays, it's like, ooh, find a big name actor or actress to read it. And that way it's a familiar voice and they kind of act, they do voice acting. So that's a much better experience. And in a weird way, it's like we're kind of going back to radio plays, which is kind of neat. And I think I'm rambling a bit, but I'm going to keep going on a little. I think it's kind of funny that a lot of our technology has brought us around in a full circle to technology that was, you know, popular in the 20s and 30s, which is like radio plays because of audiobooks. And also anybody who likes seeing animated GIFs online or GIFs, I'm not going to enter that war, whatever pronunciation you prefer. Nowadays, we've gone full circle back to silent movies because now you have animated GIFs and with subtitles to show you what the people are saying. And it's just kind of neat. These effective means of communicating things are effective even almost 100 years later, and people still like them.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned how when you first tried writing or tried becoming an author, you failed. And really, high schoolers, including myself, were terrified of failure. We look at it and we're scared. We don't want to experience failure. What does failure really look like?
Well, it sucks at the time. I mean, there's an old saying, experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. And nobody's ever going to be awesome at something right out of the box. Well, I suppose there are some geniuses out there who are just like really gifted, but everybody who's good at something, it means they were bad at it for a really long time before they were good, right? A quote from Bruce Lee is, "The master has failed more times than the novice has tried." You have to accept that failure is a part of the learning process. And I know that it's hard to just tell somebody, "Oh no, failure happens, and that's okay." It's hard to tell that to somebody and expect them to just internalize it and totally be comfortable with it. But that's kind of how the process works. I think that's why classrooms work well, because, you know, a teacher says, "All right, I'm going to teach you how to do this thing," and you're there with like 20 other kids, and you see all of you together are all failing at the beginning. So that gives you an esprit de corps. You're like, okay, I'm not the only one who's sucking at this. And we all suck at this initially, and we're moving forward slowly. I don't know. Especially there are some professions, especially anything related to entertainment, where failure is the norm and success is the odd point out. It's kind of like, you know, drilling for oil back before they had, you know, survey equipment. It's just like you're taking a stab at something and you hope it goes over well. And if it doesn't, then you move on to the next thing, then the next, then the next, then the next. And eventually, hopefully, you get a hit. And then you're like, okay, I'm great. And this will enable me to continue trying. it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, I was kind of on top of the world after The Martian came out, and I was working on my next book and everything like that. And in the middle of that, I pitched a TV show, and we even went to pilot. It was going to be about Mission Control, about people who live there. We shot the pilot. I mean, CBS spent like $10 million to have us shoot the pilot. And then when we were done, we presented and said, "Here you go." And CBS is like, we don't want to pick it up for series. So we put months and months of work and sweat and tears into this project, and it ultimately failed. And you never get a free pass, and just the entertainment industry is rough.
Well, I think it also kind of, I think what you've shared is important for the students to hear, that it's not game over, right?
Right.
And you engage and you work, and opportunities will continue to present themselves as long as you're willing to keep moving forward in, you know, sort of this journey of life. And it's, you know, it's, I think, a cool kind of segue into the next question, which is, you know, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to, you know, find another opportunity to ask a successful author whose book was turned into a successful movie. Is in high school today, we teach compliance and we teach cooperation. We rarely teach collaboration. It happens in isolated pockets. A big focus of the work that I do at the school is how to teach these students how to collaborate. And I'm curious just to, you know, hear, you write a book, it's out there. What was this process, if there was any collaboration between, you know, I don't know, did Ridley, you know, Scott just shoot you an email? Like, I'm curious to see if, you know, if you can share that, like how that part happened. But, you know, what does the collaboration process look like as you're the author of this book and now they want to turn this book into a movie? What is that like?
Well, going back a few steps, I wrote the book all by myself, right? So there was no collaboration there. But then once Random House took an interest and wanted to publish it, then it was me and my editor working on the book. We spent something like a month and a half going back and forth with edits, and he would be like, "Okay, this part's a little choppy, or this description isn't very good, or we need a little more." See, I mean, it was just the detail work on the story, and so that was back and forth, constant collaboration. And then, you know, then we released the book, and then you end up doing a lot of stuff on the business side. So I was, you know, this is all stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with the writing or creative aspect of The Martian, but I was going around doing interviews, media events, publicity events, you know, stuff like that. And that's all very collaborative because you're working with several people at Random House. You're working with their marketing group. You're working with their publicity group. You have to be a team player. You can't just, I mean, as a writer, you can't just write a book and then throw it out your cave entrance and say, just throw checks in. It doesn't work that way. You have to be part of the process of selling it. And then it got picked up for film. Now, the book author, like, my only job on the movie was to cash the check. And I feel like I did that really well. But they did choose to involve, like, I have no authority whatsoever. Like, once you sign away your book rights, I mean, they give you money, that's what you get. But then you have no say over any aspect of anything. However, they did choose to include me, mainly as a technical resource. Although, so Drew Goddard wrote the screenplay for The Martian, and he was on the phone with me almost every day, usually with technical questions, sometimes with creative. And then when they were shooting it, I would get questions through multiple intermediaries from Ridley. It wasn't like he, you know, call me on the phone or use an email. It'd be like, oh, find out from Andy something, blah, blah, blah. And for that, it was, for him, it was always science-related questions. So it was cool to be a technical resource for the film. But that was as much as I got to be a part of. I mean, all the collaboration and teamwork and stuff like that that happened on the film happened among the other major players of the film. I had very little to do with it, although I'm really happy it turned out so well.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that sort of behind the stage angle. So our last question is beyond the test. What is the one skill or area of knowledge that high school students need to have to be successful?
Give me a second. that's a tough question. I mean, if I only get to pick one thing, I guess it would be communication skills with people that aren't necessarily your friends, not necessarily people you dislike, but when whatever job you go into, whatever it is, you're going to need to be able to talk to people, convey ideas, and receive their ideas. You need to be able to compromise. You need to be able to kind of work with people, even if you don't like the approach they're taking, because any job you do, literally any job, whatever you do in life, you're going to need that skill set. And even outside of your job, you're going to need that skill set. You're going to get married someday. You're going to have or adopt kids someday. You're going to need to know how to do this interpersonal interaction. And that's actually kind of one of the hardest things about maturing as an adult, or at least for me it was. I'll let you know if I ever finish.
That's great. Yeah, you know, the saying goes, you get hired for your hard skills and you get fired for your soft skills. So I think that communication, that ability to, you know, listen and have, you know, an empathy lens when you're communicating ideas and you know, being a team player with the way that you communicate are huge.
Yeah.
I want to thank you. This has been an awesome conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I hope our audience is going to really gain from it, because I think that you've shown that A, you have to pursue the things that you're passionate about. Even if you're going to play it safe, so to speak, you always have to have that side hustle, that side thing that gets you excited to, you know, create and just engage with things that you're passionate about, and that those hobbies can actually then turn into something incredible. So we just want to both thank you. We're really grateful to have had you as a guest, and we're just excited to have our audience learn from you.
Great. Well, I hope it helps some folks out. Thanks for having me.
If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. If you could rate and subscribe in iTunes, that would be amazing.
For sneak peeks and to recommend the guest, follow us on Instagram at Beyond the Test Podcast. New episodes drop every Wednesday. Thanks so much for listening and thinking
Beyond the Test.